Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That second one was absolutely unnecessary. We're here on a Friday, an off and on rainy Friday. Chad Hartman, Dan Cook, Lindsay Gensel, Adam work mornings. He walked into my... It's like a cubicle, and he called me a number of foul names. Some of them on my face, and then it started with another word that I can't use on air. I mean,
why am I not a morning person?
Yeah, and he was pleased with himself. He was very. I like that shirt a lot, Laura.
She looks great today.
Yeah,
thank you.
Looks fantastic.
My George Michael.
George Michael.
Love him.
Got to have faith,
yes,
right there.
From the faith video.
Exactly. He's looking fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
George Michael died how long?
Like a year ago.
Well,
or
I was
so.
Just going to say, are we close to a year?
Yeah, probably.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Sad day.
George Michael, extraordinarily talented.
Oh, yeah.
I had no problem acknowledging big George Michael fan. Dan, the date was?
Christmas Day of last year. December 25th, 2006.
Oh, that's right. It was on Christmas.
Christmas Day. God. Man, oh, man. So, yeah. Where'd you get it at?
At his concert. He was here, boy, when was it? Probably the early 2000s.
Okay.
At the XL Energy Center.
How was he in concert?
Outstanding.
Was it good?
Just wonderful. Yeah.
An amazing voice.
Really amazing. Just wide range. Yep.
Laura, do you ever have the feeling that you're with someone and their own star is about to cause them to leave you? Do you ever have that feeling?
I don't know.
Never.
What's going on?
Well, somebody's hosting a show on Saturday, you know, so this, I mean, it's
oh my goodness gracious, I mean, didn't know this.
I mean, it's the beginning and the end, you know, we'll be here, Dan, and she'll be like, you know, I don't know.
Look, there's a well-established pattern on this show of producers showing up for about 10 minutes and then going on to bigger and better things.
But the question is she now...
The clock's been ticking for a while
going
now.
Going on to bigger and better things here,
well,
because...
That would be slightly different than the pattern, but it still counts, I think.
Esme off this Saturday, and Lindsay's in. The Saturday Esme experience. So Lindsay's in. Is it possible that you know... You've set something up for Esme. She thinks she's got plans, but you set the whole thing up as a way to get that show.
You mean like the accidental push down the stairs?
Well, I didn't go that far.
I'm a little dramatic.
I'm thinking like a party here.
Yeah, exactly.
A free dinner and butcher and board.
I think the confirmation from that answer is yes.
Yeah.
I mean... I love you. Okay, just in case there were any concerns after that comment.
No, but isn't that, like, that's the story of how, like, the starlet made it to the top is she pushed the lead down the stairs and then takes over.
Yeah.
Oopsie, she tripped on her high heel.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yes, well.
I did not do that.
She,
Esme is safe and sound.
Do we need a welfare check on Esme Murphy right now?
Next time, lead with the I didn't do that, then talk about whatever. I mean, heavens.
Okay, so it's Saturday. It's 6 to 9.
6 to 9.
Yeah.
Do I get to give some previews?
Yes, right here. Bring it on.
Well, so since it's my first time hosting on WCCO and it's a new situation for me, I'm actually having on Dr. Keith Rolick. He's an expert on this. He wrote a book, What to Do When You're New. And so it's an entire thing about being new.
We've been trying to get on the show for like months.
Yeah, okay.
All the time.
Funny. Okay.
Obama. Saving him for herself.
All of a sudden he's available.
Jamie Yucas and Major Garrett and Jason Rush. Amazing her lineup.
Donald Trump is going to be on.
President Obama will join me at 8:05 from the cruise ship he's sharing with Oprah and Gail.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Your Sunday host is going to be very upset.
That would be I'd be a silver star kid.
I think he was the silver star. He might have been the gold.
I hope Obama and Oprah would be a gold. Okay, whom else?
We're going to talk to a doctor at the University of Minnesota. As a younger person, colon cancer is on the rise with people my age. So actually really scary stuff. And I think it's kind of a taboo topic. No one wants to talk about colon cancer, especially because of that part of the body.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk to someone about that at 6:35. And then I'm really excited. We're going to do a pop culture roundtable. So I'm very active on social media. So I'm bringing in a couple of my favorite tweeters. And we are going to talk about everything. I mean, nothing's off limits. Family, friends, work.
Sex.
Maybe.
Okay, well.
Maybe.
Yeah.
My mom might be listening.
Mom.
Oh,
actually,
might?
Can I? No, it's actually pretty adorable. When I told her that I would be hosting, she wanted to make sure she could listen to it after the fact because she's going to a play.
Oh.
But she told me if it wasn't going to be available, she would cancel her plans so she could stay home.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. That's bless what her I heart.
It will be available.
Yes.
Right? Will be available.
Yes. But thank you for the shout out.
I
appreciate
that. So Saturday, cancel plans. You know, unlike mom, who is unwilling to cancel plans. No. Lindsay will be great. We get plenty for you today. We'll talk a little. Good luck to all of us driving in this area. If we didn't know that already. We'll talk about that in a matter of moments. Commercials, too. I mean, hosting a show, commercials. She told
pretty much
me
our entire social media platform.
She told me we had Steve Bannon lined up for Monday. I mean, he was going to come in studio. Actually, he's probably more available to come in studio now, isn't he?
I think you misunderstood her. She said Saturday at 6:30.
Saturday.
Steve Bannon.
Steve Bannon's first conversation. What do we have today? I'm about to talk about the fiasco known as the roads in the metro area, and I'm sure they're not much better outstate. We're going to talk about the ACLU and the interesting amount of criticism they are receiving for their First Amendment defense, which can involve all aspects of society, including white supremacists. And there are many people who normally are in lockstep. What's that? You just come on air. TV's off?
TV's off because of the special report.
No problem. And it is interesting, right? How consistent can you be if you support the ACLU and all of a sudden, wait a second, I support the ACLU, but wait a sec, I don't agree with this particular stance. And they're taking a lot of heat, even for the role they played and where the rally itself would take place in Charlottesville. Good guest on that, 12:35. Fran Townsend, who has joined us many, many times over the years, the former Homeland Security Director for George W. Bush, in light of what happened with the multiple attacks in Spain yesterday, and also my father in the 2 o'clock hour. So we talked about this when the reports first started coming out, and now we're at the point where 35W is about to become a complete fiasco. Just a complete fiasco. So, you know, downtown, and for a lot of people, Dan and Lindsay, who don't work downtown, they think no big deal. Well, obviously, you know, it is the driving engine of the state. So if you don't care about downtown, but you should care about the financial success of the state, no matter what state, driven by your major cities. Not only, it's not like forget, but it's a huge part of it. So downtown has been a joke. You've had the 169 project. Good luck to all the folks who've been dealing with that. And that goes, what, until October or November. Then you add the closing of from 394 coming towards downtown to get on to 94. And now this one, which is 4 years, right? This is a four-year project for $240 million. And some of the ideas you can understand, and at some point they have to be done. But my first question, how much of this is taking place now because governor after governor after governor kept pushing this off, right, Dan and Lindsay? This from Arne Carlson to Jesse Ventura to Tim Pawlenty to Mark Dayton with the debate. And finally, there's some significant money, which is going to it. And I'm one who has said, we need to upgrade the roads. I still stand by this. But the problem is, if you push it off for as long as you did, at some point, you're going to have these dual projects, which are going to be necessary. And as we said with the one which so far, by most accounts, is okay when you're shutting down the 394 exit to 94 and then you're funneling so many people onto 100, well, there's already so many people funneled onto 100 because of 169. So now when you're taking 35W and you're starting those restrictions, I'm not even counting. I mean, 694, good luck to you there. And for the clownish saying, quit bleeping, there's bigger problems in the world. No kidding. Thanks for the brilliant analysis. That's what we do here on the show. We're going to talk Spain later. We're going to talk ACLU. We talk local issues. We talk serious issues. We talk nonsense. This is an opinion-driven show backed by facts. So we're going to praise stuff. We're going to criticize stuff. There's always going to be something more important.
And if 35...
Almost,
yeah. If 35W isn't of a concern to you, well, here's something that is. Whenever you put a construction project together, there are then detours. And then there are people driving in your neighborhoods that aren't normally there. For example, with 394 to 94 ramp being closed, a lot of those people aren't taking the detour and they're coming downtown and then they're through downtown and getting back onto 94.
Right.
And I'm not complaining about that because that would be something that I would do. I would figure out a different route.
Yeah. You would go against what MnDOT has recommended. You would defy it.
I am a rebel.
I would too.
I'm going to wear my leather jacket. I'm going to get on my motorcycle.
Well, and
I don't have a motorcycle or a
think about
jacket.
The folks in Hopkins and Edina and what they've been dealing with the 169 situation and literally having police patrolling neighborhoods and shutting down roads because the folks were complaining so much.
Well, we've seen it a lot over where we are, and we're off of 55 just west of Medicine Lake. Because when 169 gets shut down in either direction, we're not where the big construction's happening. We're where they're, you know, once every weekend they're shutting one of the lanes down.
They aren't back on, by the way. If we've been assured,
we're not.
Okay, got it.
All of the people who are not on 169 are coming onto 55.
Yeah, sure.
And you'll come home on a Saturday at noon, and it's bumper to bumper traffic. And so the 169 closure really doesn't affect me, but then it affects me because all of those people are then in my neighborhood.
Right. And so I will still stand by, Dan, that our roads are terribly behind. They just are. If you get a chance to drive around into other areas, we're woefully behind. But then when it actually happens, it's horrible, right? So you can't correct the past. But some of this, if some of these things would have been staggered at different times, it just flat out would be easier.
It would. And, you could also argue that if they staggered it out more going forward, it would be easier. The problem is that it only gets more expensive and you only get further behind if you do that. So at some point, you're forced to bite the bullet and just say, okay, this is what we have to do. And that's sort of where we're at.
Yep.
And, it's not that you can't look back at those folks and say, what the heck were you thinking? But we are where we are, and we have to deal with this where we're at. So
that's what I want to ask. And then, Lindsay, you jump in when we come back. I want to pause here so we don't get too far behind. Where are you at through text on this? Do you accept that? I mean, in some ways, you have to accept, right? I mean, what are you going to do? As a protest, you're just going to going to stay in your bunker, right? Do you accept that this is the process of living in major cities and accepting that we're behind? I mean, we've had these studies for years that have told us we're tens of billions of dollars short of just getting up to speed, let alone trying something novel and getting ahead. Think about that. Tens of billions of dollars. So inconvenience, pain in the butt, adding hours, problematic in neighborhoods. But do you have the perspective of the long-term view or the short-term view when you look at this? And are you okay with saying, I can't change the past? Or are you still kind of complaining a little bit about the past? And now that at least for a period of time, there is a funding mechanism for more money, does that concern you further about the future? Or does it excite you that we might actually, over a long period of time, get our roads further up to speed, our highways in particular, which absolutely are needed, and it's not just in the metro area. It's absolutely also outstate. 81807. 81807. You've heard the news the last 45 minutes. Steve Bannon out. We'll go to a CBS update in about 7 minutes. Text away 81807. So we're talking about from downtown out to 46th Street. Bridges, lane restrictions, limitations connecting to eastbound 94, limitations to times for the downtown Minneapolis entrance ramps at 5th and 11th. It's enormous, right? And so how many people are willing to say in their own mind, because, you know, it's not like we're voting on this, right? But how many people are willing to accept this? And how much is our perspective, Dan, affected by, well, do I have to deal with it? Because it's in the broadest sense to sit there and say, gosh, we're so far behind. We should have done this for a long time. And then when you're in that traffic day after day after day after day versus you're saying that and it doesn't affect you, there is a little different perspective. But if you live, let's just say Metro, because there's no denying there are many outstate issues too.
No question.
But if you live in the metro area over the last couple of years, where's the location where you have not been affected? Because I'll tell you what, the whole thing about 94 going to St. Paul, think about 694, think about it was the last year, 2 years ago when the West was a complete fiasco.
100, 494.
All of them.
Now at 169.
At the same time.
Yeah.
Right? So where is your saving grace?
Well, we just did get a call of a gentleman who was born and raised in New Brighton, and that interchange was built. And that's 694-35W, and he says it hasn't been touched really since then. That there seems to be, at least from his perspective, a lot of focus on the middle metro and the south metro, but a lot of the roads in the north metro seem to just be left alone. And I have driven that portion of 694, and it is a disaster.
Although, right now, you know, edging that way, it's a little bit further. There are enormous restrictions on 694. Mm-hmm. I mean, enormous ones.
The thing about that, that's true. If that was built in 62, it's 55 years.
Yeah.
A lot has changed in terms of population and movement patterns in that amount of time.
Well, that's one of the texture's point is, are we sure this is, you know, how long is this fix? Because a lot of people look at 384 and what that was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the HOV has helped a little bit. It hasn't helped revenue-wise. But is that really the highway of the future? Not even close. Somebody's saying, why not put the money right now aside and spend it when the unemployment rate is higher? There are fewer people driving. Some of it is the roads need to get done, and it's a cash flow availability situation. And are you just literally going to put it aside waiting for the economy to drop off that much? I don't think you can approach it that way. But for folks who are going to deal with it, my best to you, I think your meditation, maybe occasionally listen to us. Steve Bannon out here, CBS. Quite a few good stories on this topic the last few days. One that stood out to us here on the show from Matt Pierce, LA Times. Tensions grow inside ACLU over defending free speech rights for the far right. Matt is kind enough to join us. Thank you for your time, sir. I appreciate it. How different is this criticism that the ACLU is receiving from supporters compared to other times when the people within the ACLU would say, we're trying to be consistent here. We're not defending the words. We're defending the opportunity to have your words heard in the places that the individuals deem appropriate. Is this the most criticism they've received? Is this typical? What is your sense on that, sir?
I wouldn't describe it necessarily as the most criticism that the ACLU has ever received for defending the far right. Back in 1978, they defended neo-Nazis who wanted to march in Skokie, Illinois. Where
the most famous one, probably, right?
Yeah, the most famous ACLU case on this particular subject. And And that was hugely controversial. At that time, the ACLU had a lot of members left over from the Nixon administration. You know, it's kind of like it was kind of like now, you know, they had their membership surge and they had a lot of donations. But then, you know, people saw what they did in that case in Skokie, and they kind of abandoned the ACLU and drove. So it's not necessarily that I think, you know, this kind of criticism and internal debate with the ACLU is necessarily anything new, but I do think that some of the context has changed.
So as you point out, that initially officials in Charlottesville denied organizers Unite the Right for the rally to permit at the site of the Lee statue. And then the ACLU filed that suit, and they were able to then win that in court, and that's how the rally was allowed to take place there. What is the consistent message that the ACLU is trying to say to its supporters and to members of the media about the criticism of the role they're playing?
Their argument has always been, you know, look, they're free speech absolutist. They'll stick up for anybody's rights to express themselves peacefully, you know, to gather in public and to enjoy their First Amendment rights. But what they are saying and what they're, you know, and that's what gives them their sort of their power, right? Because they do represent a lot of generally like left-wing interests. They're a big bulwark against the Trump administration right now. I mean, everybody kind of knows this about them, but what kind of gives them some of their cachet is that they do really cross the line in a big way. I say the political line in a big way by defending these far-right groups. So what's happening here is that they're taking a look at some of the circumstances around what happened in Charlottesville. And, you know, this is not, to them, they're arguing that this is not the same as some of the past rallies that they have, you know, argued on behalf of. You know, this wasn't just guys who went out there holding placards that, you know, may have expressed, you know, views supporting, you know, Nazism or white supremacy. But if you look at what happened in Charlottesville, these guys clearly came prepared for a fight. You know, they were carrying, you know, shields and helmets. Some of them had guns, and, you know, some of them had weapons, and they fought with, you know, left-wing activists who also had, you know, come prepared for a fight and had weapons. And, you know, they kind of look at some of the context here, and they're saying, like, this is not really within our comfort zone of, you know, what we're willing to defend, because, you know, violence is not free speech. It's illegal. And so they're saying that they don't want to be in the position of trying to defend violent gatherings because they don't think that that is something that should be protected under the First Amendment.
Well, it's interesting, right, in how they decide that, because as deplorable as almost all of us find the words, and it's almost all of us because there were many people there when Jews will not replace us and blood and soil going back to the Nazis, I think the ACLU would say, listen, the words and the opportunity to say that, that's the whole point. It's not, we don't need to step in when it's something that's shared and liked by everybody. But how do they then determine if they're going to provide support to something if they think it might involve violence? Do they have to look at the group's reputation? Do they have to look at the group's past? And if they're stepping in too strong, Matt, do they then look hypocritical if they're then backing away a little bit?
You're right. I mean, and this is really the hardest part for the ACLU, because they have, you know, requests from all sorts of groups of kind of varying kind of far out there political beliefs. And they, you know, kind of get these requests and they evaluate which ones look like, you know, their cases that need to be defended. They might, you know, not take other cases where they have some concerns about the people who are gathering, you know, current concerns about, you know, whether they might be violent or whether they're trustworthy. And so now they're in this situation where, you know, they had stepped in Virginia to, you know, argue on behalf of this particular, you know, group's right to gather. And I should say multiple groups. I mean, it was all sorts of far right groups that don't necessarily agree with each other on a lot of stuff, but they're generally, you know, white power groups. But now they're in this position where they're saying that they need to apply a little bit more skepticism and more scrutiny of these types of groups if they, you know, ask for help or if it looks like they need help in the future, because now, you know, they've kind of got a track record of, you know, showing up somewhere with weapons, of, you know, being involved with violence when they've gathered in the past. And now, so the ACLU is going to have to look at, you know, have these people made violent threats on social media? Have they, you know, have they talked about arming themselves? And they're going to have to kind of look at each one of these on a case-by-case basis. And I mean, this is sort of just my kind of my take on the situation. But just in general, I imagine that their skepticism broadly is going to be much higher for any of these groups now.
Yeah.
And so to a certain extent, these groups sort of have lost any kind of, you know, small benefit of the doubt that they may have already had with the ACLU. And so I would be watching very closely to see if the ACLU takes any of their cases for an event like this in the near future.
Matt Pearce, national reporter for the LA Times with us, talking about the ACLU, some of the criticism they are receiving when they've stepped in on matters, including on Charlottesville. Individuals who normally have been very supportive now, because they don't agree with where the white supremacists stood, they're bothered a great deal by the ACLU and the role. He's written about this extensively. I'll just pick up on a quote that you had from the national leader of the ACLU in reacting to some of the criticism out in California. At the same time, we believe that even odious hate speech, with which we vehemently disagree, garners the protection of the First Amendment when expressed non-violently. We make decisions on whom we'll represent and in what context on a case-by-case basis. The horrible events in Charlottesville last weekend will certainly inform those decisions going forward. So in California, are we seeing people who are stepping down from the ACLU? What will cause the ACLU to react in an even stronger way? Is it money? Is it people stepping away? Is it coverage? What's your sense on that?
I don't know the extent to which they are pressurable by the idea of people not donating to them or stepping away, because this is one of the things that they've had experience with. You know, if it were all about the money, it would be very easy for them to, you know, just not defend neo-Nazis or Ku Klux Klan members at all, because this, yep. these are sort of the mortal enemies of the ACLU's own supporters more generally. I mean, because a lot of the people who support the ACLU are Democratic. You know, they might be minorities. They are very interested in civil liberties more generally. And so the cases that they're really passionate about right now for the ACLU, for example, are, you know, the ACLU fighting the Trump administration's travel ban. You know, these are things that they're really passionate about. And so when these neo-Nazi cases come up, it really forces a lot of these donors and these members to be like, okay, you know, I decided that I was going to support the ACLU with my money and sort of my vocal support, but you know, you will have those kind of people step away. And this has always been the ACLU's stance, you know, going back to the 20s and 30s,
right,
when they first started to defend, you know, Ku Klux Klan and neo-Nazi groups. So I don't know the extent to which they might be pressurable from the outside, because I think the people who are involved with the ACLU know that this is part of the deal. This is what they do. And it's always going to bring internal criticism. But I do think that you will see pressure coming from inside the organization, from people who will argue over things about, you know, guns. To what extent are they going to defend groups that, you know, may have guns or who are, you know, very pro-Second Amendment? And so as a result, sort of one of the small tweaks you see as a result of that internal debate and that internal pressure between their affiliates and their, you know, national organization is that last night the head of the ACLU announced that they would no longer defend white supremacist groups that would bring guns to demonstrations. And that's kind of, it's an extrapolation of their existing policy on guns. They believe in some gun regulation. They don't think that that violates the Second Amendment. But they're saying, you know, they don't have a hardline view on the Second Amendment. So they're saying, like, we kind of think that, you know, these groups having guns at protests is actually could be, you know, anathema to the idea of free expression. If people come up to these rallies with guns and violence breaks out, then that's not free expression. You know, that's not promoting ideas, and that's not, you know, spreading discussion in the way that the founding fathers intended. So
is that their out? Is that their out going forward? They can then say, because you know this very well, we have another number of events coming up. Some have already been canceled. We certainly expect when school starts, it will be more events. And the ACLU has been criticized by some conservatives, Ann Coulter and others, saying, where were you when, you know, violence basically pushed me away? But is that going to be their path, Matt? Do you sense if they think it's not just the violence that is happening from words, but if there is a pattern of anybody within, in this case, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and bringing to guns previous events, that's where they can say, we can't support you because of our policy.
It does seem like a big block to them defending a lot of these cases in the future, but that may not necessarily be the case for all the cases. And this is something that their executive director has sort of, he's still saying, you know, look, it's still going to be a case-by-case basis. For example, the ACLU recently filed a lawsuit on behalf of Milo Yiannopoulos. He's a kind of a famous right-wing provocateur, and he's not a white nationalist, but he is frequently criticized, you know, kind of by leftists and liberals for some of the stuff that he says about, you know, minorities. And he was violently protested in Berkeley. And so one of the lawsuits that the ACLU filed on his behalf was over subway ads in Washington, D.C. Some of his subway ads promoting his new book had been removed by the government agency that manages the Washington, D.C. transit system. And so that's a case where, you know, you have someone that's kind of on the right who is having a speech issue with the government, and it doesn't involve guns. It doesn't even really involve public protest, but something that ACLU is still interested in because, you know, they believe that the government is infringing on someone's speech there. And so that's an example of a case where, you know, the ACLU, you know, these kind of new interpretations of their policies may not block them from, you know, taking up cases for similar people in the future. But I think what they're trying to do is to avoid anything remotely resembling what happened in Charlottesville, where, you know, it's kind of a public spectacle where, you know, some of these attendees are clearly anticipating clashes with counter protesters who are very willing to use violence or to be prepared for violence. And the ACLU is basically saying, like, they don't want to be a part of that. It doesn't seem like their mission. It doesn't seem like it's, you know, productive for everyone else's civil rights to, you know, promote events where violence might break out. So there are, I mean, they are clearly taking a much more skeptical stance towards these groups. But at the same time, I don't think it would be accurate to say that they're totally foreclosing on the possibility of representing them in the future.
Matt, good stuff. Interesting topic, complicated topic, and it's not going away. And certainly been heightened by the events of this week. Thanks for coming on. We'll reach out to you again.
Thanks for having me.
Matt Pierce with us. You know, Dan, we've talked about this purity test many, many times. Is it 50? Okay, let's go to it right now. Here's CBS. Yeah, I was thinking my mistake. It was 51 because we certainly wanted to go to the Bannon update. And we're going to talk a lot about that early next hour. My point before on the ACLU is this. You know, for years, Dan, we've talked about this purity test, which came up a lot in the rise of the Tea Party. I go back to a senator from Utah named Bob Bennett, where I think in all these ratings, he was getting like a 95 or 96% rating as a conservative. And I forget, there may be one or two issues where he did this awful thing. He might have worked with the Obama administration. You know,
how dare he?
It wasn't like, yeah, he all of a sudden became an uber lefty. But all of a sudden, because of that, everybody started getting primaried. And now we're seeing a little bit of that for the Democrats, for sure.
Yep.
Right?
Yep, absolutely.
The power of Bernie, Elizabeth Warren. There's a story today about the centrist Democrats who are pushing back. So this isn't completely analogous, but it's kind of close. If you believe in the ACLU's mission about you absolutely should have the right to have your words heard, they can't just be the words that you agree with. And we see this on college campuses. Mm-hmm. We see it in other areas. I think some of these areas, I think the liberals can be the most sanctimonious about it. And I think we're seeing a little bit. Now, everything has certain restrictions. We have this conversation with the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment doesn't mean everybody, no matter what, has a gun.
Bazooka, yeah.
Go out there. Because the courts have decided there can be restrictions, and then we come up, what are reasonable, what's appropriate, and then the folks who on that purity test are like, you're coming to take my guns, and it works, right? Yep. Think about Obama when he was running. Gun sales went up. Yeah, he really came for their guns.
They sold more guns during his 8 years than any previous eight-year stretch, I think, in the nation's history.
Trump played that up. So now on this, if you really are consistent,
yeah,
and you can step in certainly on violence, you 100% should, But what's going to happen the next time there's another group of skinheads, neo-Nazis, who have no pattern of the violence that took place down in Charlottesville? But they're detestable to a lot of people about what they're saying. How consistent are you going to be?
That's the question. And it really is, it hits at the core of the ACLU's mission, right? Because
absolutely,
for years and years and it's years, it. The right has tried to paint the ACLU as just a liberal hack group. And so...
Pot, meat, kettle.
And the ACLU's response is always, yeah, but look, we'll defend the skinheads and the neo-Nazis, their right to peacefully assemble and speak.
The famous Skokie case.
Absolutely. We'll defend that as much as we'll defend anybody on the left. Well, if you're going to start hedging your bets there, you suddenly lose that moral high ground, and then you are just another kind of, you know, liberal policy group.
Let's see how they play it out. 12:54, that's your Lindis Construction Time Check. Time to improve the look of your home with our clog-free LeafGuard brand gutters. On the multiple terrorist attacks or thwarted terrorist attacks in Spain, Fran Townsend, Homeland Security Director under George W. Bush, frequent guest of ours, in light of stories like yesterday, Fran Townsend's with us at 1:35. My father joins 2:35, taped a conversation with him. I started, Dan, by the way, by saying, you know, for this big must-win exhibition game tonight, he should invite some people over. And at first he thinks I'm coming over. But then I say, maybe how about some listeners? And he's not as excited.
Not as excited then?
Yeah. He is as excited, though, if it's the garage sale and he can make money.
Sure.
And then he's willing to have people over. Yeah. And that's when I've drawn the line. Because I don't want people he doesn't know just coming over the house.
Randomly showing up his house, what could possibly go wrong?
But Bud does it. And Bud feels completely fine.
Who's going to mess with Bud?
That's true. Yeah. Although, who's going to mess with my father also? I mean, you know, maybe if my father has Bud around the place the entire time, that might be the better way to go.
That would go well.
There's plenty of politics to discuss, obviously, with the departure of the architect, Steve Bannon. That term drove Mr. Trump nuts. Part of the reason why Bannon is out.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.